At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Jeffrey Roberts, who's very generous to help me understand his new book, Stalin's Library, A Dictator and His Books. The professor has witnessed these books. I have to imagine them. And Stalin writing in the margins, writing, underlining, writing notes to himself, doodling in some instance. Stalin was also a keen copy editor and an editor-in-chief of documents. In the course of his career, he was a very busy manager of information. He was a knowledge worker. He also was a great fan of history. What kind of history is revelatory? Professor, Rome, what a surprise. Rome is important to Stalin, especially as told by an historian who was not a socialist, if I understand, not a Bolshevik, Robert Vipper. Who was Robert Vipper to Stalin?
Vipper was a Russian historian, yeah, pre-revolutionary Russian historian. He specialized in the history of early Christian history, actually. But he also wrote about the ancient world in general, and particularly about the rise and fall of the Russian Empire. And Stalin was very interested in Vipper's historical works, and he marked them extensively. Yeah, no, history was Stalin's favorite subject. Yeah, and Vipper, I would say, was his favorite historian. And Vipper wasn't a Marxist historian. Stalin had a rather disdainful attitude to a lot of Marxist historians. He thought they were too abstract. Yes, what he liked was informative narrative history, the kind of history that Vipper, the Vipper, and then later on in the 1930s, that's the kind of history that Stalin wants to be taught to Soviet school children. Okay, it's narrative history with a kind of socialist, Bolshevik, communist kind of like spin to it, but nevertheless, it's narrative history as we would understand it.
And it has a payoff, which is the Soviet Union. That's the idea. This Hollywood movie is going down happily. Now, a detail about history.
It has a payoff in the Second World War when Stalin and the Soviets beat Hitler and the Nazis, yeah? And part of the reason they beat Hitler and the Nazis is because of this kind of like patriotic kind of like culture and support for communism, for the Soviet system that he built up in the 1930s, partly through the schools and this kind of historical education.
As a parent, Stalin is also keen on history. Svetlana comes to him and tells him she wants to study literature. What does he say, yeah, Professor?
He says, yes. Well, basically, he says, you want to be a beaten, he didn't use this word, you want to be a beaten, you want to be a bohemian. They're all ignorant, these people, so I'm not going to let you do it. Before you go off and study literature or be a literature person, you're going to study some social history, right? And that is what she does, and she accepted that. And Svetlana herself said it was a good decision by our father because she did learn a lot. But actually, later on, she switched back to literary studies, probably much to the disgust of Stalin.
In a lecture series that Vipper gave in 1899 at Moscow University, when Stalin was just running away from the seminary, I don't know if this is Stalin's interpretation or whether Vipper said it. I wrote it down, but I didn't put quotes around it. Forgive me. Class forces that drove expansion of the Roman Empire and led to its downfall. Is that Stalin or is that Vipper?
it's hard to tell. Okay, yeah, that particular book, it's Vipper's outline history of the Roman Empire, rise and fall of the Roman Empire. And when I discovered that book in the archive, I was very, very excited because it was extensively marked, right? And my assumption was it was extensively marked by Stalin. But this was an old book, right? This was a second-hand book, yes, which Stalin didn't acquire until too much later. And in the end, I had to conclude that the markings, at least most of them anyway, weren't actually Starling's markings. Yeah, because after you've been studying these markings for a few years and you've looked at like thousands of examples, you develop an eye for what's actually Starling's markings and handwriting and what's not. And I concluded that these weren't Starling's markings. So the summary you said there, I think, was some other readers, you know, maybe some history students or maybe even some history teacher marking out a book. Now, having said that, because these aren't Starling's markings, doesn't mean he didn't read the book. I mean, I would think he probably did read the book because he was a great admirer of Wieper's, and he liked Wieper's approach. He liked his style. He liked his writing, his kind of history.
Stalin was keen on history, Russian history, which is yes. A little challenging because he's a Georgian, but fine, the Russian history. And you have a quote from him that's quite wonderful. Peter was Peter, Catherine was Catherine. We need textbooks with facts, events, and names. Let's not go to Peter or Catherine. Let's go to Ivan Grozny, a.k.a. Ivan the Terrible. This is striking to me, Professor. I know it's not a smoking gun, but Ivan the Terrible was to be, in some fashion, reintroduced to the Russian people under the Soviet Union. And Robert Wieper was one of the people to reintroduce him. What did Stalin want? What did Wieper do for Ivan the Terrible?
Okay. Before I ask that question, just quickly, Stalin was, you could say he was a Soviet and indeed a Russian patriot, if you like, but Stalin was also an internationalist, yeah? He had global interests in terms of history. So he's interested in the history of lots of different countries, not just the history of Russia. Yeah, but going back to Wieper. Okay, so Wieper specialised in the history of early Christianity. He wrote this book about the Roman Empire, which we discussed earlier. But Wieper also wrote a very famous book about Ivan the Terrible. Ivan Grozny, Ivan the Third, and Wieper in that book sought to, it was published in the early 1920s, sought to restore Ivan the Terrible's reputation, because he's called the Terrible because he was said to be a very cruel czar, had a very like repressive internal regime, had lots of people killed, and so on. A bit like Stalin, you might like to say. But what Wieper argued in that book was that, you know, Ivan the Terrible was a great Russian state builder. Yeah, he built up the state, he strengthened the state, he crushed internal opposition, not just to his own power, but to the integrity of the state as well. Okay, so that's the book he wrote. Okay, unfortunately, Stalin's copy of that book, which he must have had a copy and he must have read, disappeared from the archives. Right, but we can be virtually certain that Stalin did read that book, Wieper's book about Ivan the Terrible, right? Because he read other books by Wieper, and because he's about admiration for him, but also because Stalin's views on Ivan the Terrible were broadly the same as Wieper's views. Yeah, Stalin had a very positive view of Ivan the Terrible, saw him as being a kind of progressive historical figure in Russian history who had actually founded. The initial strong Russian state, which then becomes a Bolshevik and Soviet and socialist state in the 20th century. Yeah. So some historians argue that you know that Stalin saw himself as a kind of a modern, a latter day Ivan the Terrible. I don't think that's true. But I think he certainly saw what happened during Ivan's reign as being as providing some kind of retrospective justification for what he did in the Soviet Union, Stalin did in the 1930s in the Great Terror, in terms of consolidating the Soviet system, and as Stalin saw it. I'm not saying this is true, but he saw it as defending the Soviet Union from its external enemies.
Ivan the Terrible gives us an opportunity to mention that Stalin also fancied himself as a Hollywood producer. This is Samuel Goldwyn in Moscow, because he wants a movie out of Ivan the Terrible's new face to the Russian people, to the Soviet peoples. He also wants a play to be produced in Moscow and other cities of Ivan the Terrible. So he taps Tolstoy, Alexei Tolstoy, who's not Lev Tolstoy's son. He's related, but he's not. He just has the same name, to write a three-part play. And he taps Sergei Eisenstein, the great producer and director of Battleship Potemkin, October, 10 Days That Shook the World, and Alexander Nevsky, to make a movie, a motion picture that will go around the world about Ivan the Terrible. Neither are successful. Why not, Professor?
Yeah, so in 1940, I think it was exactly, the party leadership decides to launch a campaign, a process to restore, rehabilitate Ivan the Terrible's historical reputation, you know, to present him as being, you know, a good star, a progressive star in certain ways. Okay, so they do various things, which you've just described, including commissioning Eisenstein to direct a movie about the life of Ivan the Terrible. Okay, and Eisenstein does that, and the movie comes out, is in two parts. And the first part of the part one of Eisenstein's Ivan the Terrible, Stalin likes. He says Eisenstein did a good job of that movie, showed Ivan the Terrible in the right light. The problem is that Stalin didn't like the part two of Eisenstein's film, Ivan the Terrible, part two. And as a consequence, part two of Eisenstein's film wasn't actually released during Stalin's lifetime. It's not released, shown publicly until much later. Why doesn't Stalin like part two? It's because he presents, this is what Stalin says about the film, he presents Ivan the Terrible as being a weak and decisive figure. He presents Ivan the Terrible's security force as being, you know, this is Stalin's words, as being like the Ku Klux Klan, as being like a bunch of mercenaries and criminals, whereas in fact they were a progressive security force. He fails to present Ivan the Terrible as a patriotic czar, in fact the most patriotic of all the sorts, who tries to keep foreign influences in his place. So Stalin's not very happy about Eisenstein's effort in part two of the film. In fact, you know, there is a meeting between Stalin and Eisenstein where Stalin takes Eisenstein to task and points out the defects in that film. One of the things he says to Eisenstein, this conversation, he says it's okay to show, you know, that Ivan the Terrible was a cruel czar, and in fact Stalin also said, as far as he was concerned, Ivan the Terrible wasn't cruel enough, right? But you have to understand the reasons for Ivan's cruelty and Ivan being so terrible. Is that the reason for it was that he was defending the state against this internal and external elements. Now, of course, when Stalin is saying that to Eisenstein, he's not just talking about Ivan the Terrible, is he? He's talking about himself and the way he sees his own historic role in the Soviet Union. That's the way he sees himself, as defending the revolution, socialism, from its internal and external enemies.
The book is Stalin's Library. Jeffrey Roberts is the author, a dictator in his books. Stalin was also an editor-in-chief, and he had opinions about the United States of America in his time. When we come back, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.